You will have days where you want to stop. You're like, this is not going to work. You will fail. And then you'll have days of, holy cow, I got a $16,000 order. I'm going to make this thing work. And if you believe in your product and there's a need for it in the market, you will succeed in this market. A lot of SaaS companies fail. I know that for a fact. GovTech is a very tricky space to get into because you better know your customer.
But government can create the conditions necessary for businesses to expand and hire more workers.
Welcome to Civic Thinker, the podcast for fearless doers, GovTech innovators, and social entrepreneurs striving to reshape our world.
I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Together, we'll unravel the mysteries, dismantle the barriers, and equip you with the tools to conquer the odds and achieve success.
The answer is clear. For the people to win, politics as usual must lose.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you.
Because it's so hard that if you don't, any rational person would give up.
Ask what you can do for your country.
Hello and welcome to Civic Thinker. I am so excited for the guest here today, Ben Laird, the president of Frontline Public Safety Solutions, who he founded with his co-founder, Russ Real. And he's created this amazing company that's doing really well right now in the GovTech public safety space. And gosh, man, I'm just so excited you're here. Can you start us out with like a background? You know, how did you start this company? How did it come about?
So in 2005, I became a police officer for the Village of River Forest. It's a small 30-man agency in Illinois. From there, I just started as patrol. I did plain clothes. I did detectives. One thing I think I did right along the way is I got my undergrad in business instead of law enforcement. A lot of people get their undergrad in criminal justice, things of that nature, and went and continued my career and got a master's in accounting. So I always had a business mindset, right, even in law enforcement. What started Frontline is in 2015, I was part of an RMS transition. What that means is it stands for record management system. So pretty much in law enforcement, all these officers, all their incident reports and accident reports and evidence reports, everything's tracked in an RMS. So in law enforcement, you would think in the United States that we have the best technology. Everything is state of the art, way to go. The truth of the matter is, Matt, we're using pen and paper and Excel and still using Access. These departments are using Access, which has been unsupported for years, to do basic functionality. It just didn't make sense. So we started in 2016. I LLC'd Frontline, me and Russ, and there were a few other partners at that time involved. And we built what's called our mobile toolkit, which was six modules, cloud-based platform where the residents can enter things in through a public portal, and then it would go directly to the police, and we avoided the pen and paper.
How hard was it to get your first couple of customers?
I'll tell you exactly how hard it was. I was a detective at the time, and I was doing sales as a detective, which is, yes, I understand that I shouldn't be doing that. But I would literally be sitting in my office, and an agency Googled us somehow, or I wasn't making cold calls. The agency was Villa Park, Illinois. So, right by where I worked, they heard about our toolkit, and they had a huge struggle with overnight parking at that time. Overnight parking in some states is if you want to put your car on the street, you have to call dispatch, give them your license plate, all that numbers. They write it down in an Excel document, and now I know I can't ticket that car, right? So that's something that we knew we had a big hurt here just locally in Illinois. And he's like, I want it. And I said, great. He goes, well, how much is it? And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, I don't know. I haven't done pricing. And I literally just busted out a number. I said, how about $700? And he's like, yeah, go ahead and invoice me. Like, okay. I don't know how to invoice anybody. I mean, I this was my first order. This is it. Like, what are we doing? So, quickly bought QuickBooks and taught myself how to create an invoice. And the second customer was Ducom. Ducom is a dispatch agency for 24 agencies in Illinois. And they said, we want this to be our platform for all 24 police departments. And it was a purchase order for about, $15,000, which in my mind, I'm like, holy cow, I just got a $15,000.
Huge, huge at the time.
Huge, yeah. Huge. And the third one was out in New Jersey, overnight parking issue, and closed that deal, which was like $18,000. And I'm like, we have 30 something thousand dollars in revenue on this concept. And that's literally how this thing started. the key, I think, was the implementation of this went very smooth. Even for our first customers, it went very, very smooth.
And then they probably, you know, weren't afraid to tell others at that point. One of the things we were excited to have you on for here is to talk about this outsourcing thing. And, you know, I think people have a lot of, you know, at least I had a lot of concerns about outsourcing, you know, in terms of government regulations and, you know, are people not going to buy from me if they know some of my team is not from the United States? Have you encountered any problems with that? Or did you have any worries like that when you first outsourced?
I did, because people were obviously very concerned about security. And at that time, we were not on the GovCloud. We were just on a regular cloud server. And we outsourced to India. And I can tell you there's an agency in Illinois that the second they heard that our developers were from India, they said, we can't do business with you. So, you know, obviously that was a concern. But I will say the majority of everyone we dealt with didn't care where our developers were. No one even asked where our developers were. If there's someone listening out here who says, I want to get in the GovTech world, can I outsource to a different country? My opinion is we had minimal issues doing that.
You know, I think it's more about your team's processes than, you know, where they're from. I don't know. You know, we fill out a lot of IT tech forms when you sell to.
Oh God, yes.
Sell to government.
Yeah, and, especially colleges. If you guys want to go sell to a tier one university, just be ready for a 385 page document. Tech doc. So yes, it is very intense.
It's atrocious, and I think that's where it comes down to. Like, it's more about your processes. You know, what kind of things you have in place, not necessarily where the people are.
Yeah.
At least that's been my experience. Going back to outsourcing and thinking through your decision to use that on the development side, why even outsource to begin with?
We paid $60,000 a year for a developer, a phenomenal developer, I might add, versus if we wanted to find somebody here in the U.S., you know, at that time in 2018, their salaries were anywhere from $150,000 to $200,000. And that's if you find the right good guy. We didn't have that money, so we outsourced on to India to save one third of our cost. That was our main thing. And Russ has a relationship with this company for 10 years prior to Frontline even starting. So he knew he'd be able to get a good developer at a good price and go from there.
You know, I know even with my previous company, Agency 360, we tried to hire locally. I mean, I was the original developer. So I created the product originally. I did the coding and all of that kind of stuff. But when we were ready, I mean, probably similar to the growth you've had to go through, you realize, like, if I'm going to grow this thing, I can't be the developer. I've got to manage these people. I've got to grow a team and do more than just do the development. And we tried to hire here in the States. And, similar problem. Like, we didn't have the revenue. You know, we were paying tons of money for lower quality talent. It really slowed us down. And we were able, for a fraction of the cost, get better, harder working, higher quality people. And I guess it's just this nature of small revenue companies, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And the key to me was me and Russ did not take salaries, and Russ is a very smart guy. He is still the designer of every single screen. He's the architect of Frontline. Just to clarify, he does not do the coding. He's the architect. He's the one that literally designs everything and then sends it to the developers to develop and gives them instructions on what this technology needs to do.
Now, so, but let's go back to this decision about what you can outsource. I mean, especially as a growing company, you're bootstrapped, roughly, you're trying to grow, or, you just don't have a lot of revenue coming in that you can spend. What positions do you think are ripe? And you mentioned support might not be a good one. I think you mentioned sales didn't work out well if you're trying to outsource sales. Are there other positions in a company that you think could probably work out okay in terms of outsourcing?
I'll be honest with you. I mean, we even tried outsourcing marketing to a company where it was a year-long marketing plan. We paid a ton of money for it at that time, and it brought us nothing. We tried outsourcing to magazine articles, and all of these things were just all a bunch of waste of money. But no, I honestly, besides development, Nothing else was outsourced with us that worked. We tried. I tried different angles, and it just never worked. Besides developers, yeah, especially the sales part. Oh man, I put so many hours into teaching these guys our products, and it just never went anywhere. I just wasted time.
Yeah, you know, I think my experience outsourcing certain positions, it's just been hit or miss. You know, part of it just a lot of times when there was some place that I was unfamiliar with, like. You know, I never hired a marketing person before or done anything with marketing. I think outsourcing it or going with an agency to begin with, although that wasn't the best long-term fit, I thought it was really good for my learning. You know, when you're looking for employees or you're looking to hire maybe outsource or something, I mean, you kind of were fortunate that you had this co-founder that already knew some people. Right. Or if you had to go
in terms of development, yes.
Yeah.
Never an issue in development. Everybody that we hired worked out great. The training stages are great. And they're phenomenal developers. They're really, really good. Yeah. Okay. We got lucky enough that was not one of our struggles.
All right. Well, then let's think about this. Like after you bring on an employee, whether it's a salesperson, a developer or whatever, how do you evaluate? Like, I always, you know, the people part, especially when you're in this small stage, like where you're at and where I was technically currently where I am with my current company, like the people part is, you know, I think one of the most critical, hardest parts, you know, and maybe that's because I'm a product guy, you know, the product seems easy to me, but it's the, you know, creating this structure. Like how do you evaluate your people after you bring them up?
And I'd say I honestly winged it for a while because I didn't know. And I would give people a shot and sometimes it worked out and sometimes it didn't. And, you know, we've let go of 5-6 people since I've started this thing. Never a fun thing to do, I might add. But I've been very fortunate too, where I got some rock stars that came in here. And like my Mike Solano, my very first rep, is just a hard worker. We hired a dental assistant from Florida off of a referral due to her work ethic. And she has been number one in sales the last 2 years. So one thing people ask me, is it better to hire someone who does sales or is it better to hire someone who is in law enforcement? And that's a very good question. In my experience, I have one guy with us today who was in law enforcement, but everybody else's background was in sales except for, you know, again, a dental assistant, some random girl who we gave her a shot, and is she a hard worker? She knows how to sell. She talks over these guys, these chiefs, and tell them, no, you should be tracking it like this, right? She's been with us 3 years now, something like that. But so she has the confidence to do it. But in my opinion, I just, you know, listen to the referrals of clients, referrals of people I know. Hey, give this person a shot. It's great work ethic. And then I trained them on the software myself. And you can't really teach somebody to sell. In my opinion, either they know how to sell or they don't have the personality to sell. Selling is a very interesting, difficult type A personality task, right? You got to have no shame. And I would say the one thing we did is I didn't allow anyone to talk to a client until they knew our product inside and out. I was very picky about, because I remember being in law enforcement talking to vendors and they'd be like, oh, you know what? I only handle the incident reports. I don't handle the evidence side of things. So let me get you over to somebody in evidence. And 2 days later, I get somebody. They would say, I don't know, so many times. Let me get back to you on that. And it's really cool for our sales reps where they really have the answers to the majority of the questions that get asked in a demo. Right.
Love that point. I mean, it's something we've been talking about internally too. Just nobody wants to be put off and pushed to somebody else. Well, let's talk about the other, you know, some stuff that maybe the other entrepreneurs out there might get some value out of too. Like in your journey so far, Ben, what, you know, are there any mistakes that you've made or challenges that we haven't talked about?
Last year we went to 38 trade shows. Some are great. Some are, you know, we get a good return on investment. You show face, you do this. Some of these state shows that you want to go to and you think you're going to do so good, and you just literally just dump $6,000 going to a show because, you know, there's certain states that they like to buy their vendors that are in that state, right? Like Matt, you started in Indiana. I'm assuming Indiana is probably where you started selling your product. And then you built a pretty big brand in Indiana. I started from Illinois. If you look at our client list, Illinois is our number one clients. We have over 200 clients in Illinois. So trade shows in Illinois were great. Then we fly out to California and no one knows who you are. So today, now that we have more money and we can do it, we can experiment on these shows. But we've wasted a lot of money, I can say, on some of these shows. The national shows, the IACPs, the NINA, APCOs, these big national ones, I encourage people to go to because you get a lot more people there who are actually interested in looking for some new technology. The state shows, if you have the extra money, go for it. But we've blown some good amount of money on a lot of these state shows. And yes, we're going to 30 more shows this year, so it's not like I'm not doing it, but can risk that cash.
Sometimes with the state shows too, or the more local regional kind of shows, you don't even get the decision makers, because it's close. They just send anybody in the department. Whereas I think maybe the difference there is that the national shows, like, you got to be a very important person at the department if they're going to pay to send you all the way to Denver, Orlando, Vegas, San Diego, and you'll have some decision-making power, I would think, if they're sending you, if you're that important to the organization.
And they actually care. Like, they're there to find a better way to do something, right? And at the state shows, it's more of that these agencies know each other and they get to go and hang out for a couple of days and, they'll walk the floor, but they don't really care about use of force software or policy management and this and that. We've definitely made some mistakes in trade shows, but
there's a lot of expenses with the trade shows you don't think of when you first start too, right? Like, you just look at the table fee and you think, I can afford that.
And then there's electric. And then if you're going to a union state show, if you want to run your cable from a 6-foot cable on your thing, you need a union worker to show up, tape that down for $600. Instead of me taping it down for free. So, yes, there are a million Wi-Fi and, I go on and on about carpet. Some of these nitpicking things. Carpet, there you go. Yeah. You want a stool? No problem. $300.
Yeah. And then you haven't even factored in your travel, your food, your lodging, of whoever you send there. So these trade shows, like, you just look at, it's only $1,200 for a table. Well, it actually ends up costing your organization a lot more than that.
It does. It does. Yeah. And we track all that these days. When I first started, we didn't track any of that. But now I can tell you how much to the dollar we spent on a show and then what was our return on investment of that show. So over the course of time, we know what shows we're making money on and what shows we are not going to again.
If you could go back to 2015, 2016 and talk to yourself in the fire back then, what would you tell yourself with all the knowledge that you have now?
I would have at that time given up some equity to raise money earlier to get a board around me to help me advise. We didn't have that till 2021, so we pretty much winged it from 2015 to 2021. In 2021, we probably were at, 125, 250. We had 100% growth rate every year. So it was 125, 250, 500, 1 million. So we're probably about 1 million in sales, which is incredible, by the way, for winging what I'll call a company. But to me, we really turned into a business in 2021 when we got a board of advisors who were able to assist. We hired 10 people over the course of 2 years, grew it to what it is today. It is a true business today. We have a lot of KPIs now that we didn't have before. We know what our churn rate is. I know what our net retention is. I know all these business terminology that people want to hear. I know what all that means now. If you asked me what a KPI was in 2018, I'd be like, what are you talking about? What's a KPI? I have no idea. I'm just a cop, man. I don't know what a KPI is. So learning that and having somebody to help advise us grow the proper way is why I believe we're so successful throughout the years. And again, almost 100% growth rate every year.
And that's gotta be huge. I mean, like, you and I both, we come from the law enforcement world. I didn't really have any business knowledge. You at least had a little bit of a degree. You know, I knew tech really well, but I didn't know business at all. And gosh, just to have that advisory would have been huge.
It scaled us and made us spend money. You know, if we're ever in the black, or you know, profitable in a month, the advisors are, why are you not spending more money right now? Like, they're, what should we be spending more money on to grow faster? And I'm at a great place now, but I can tell you the journey is scary. I think, Matt, you would agree. Yeah. You're putting a lot at risk. You're dedicating a lot of your life to this thing. And I read a lot of books. I read a lot of entrepreneurship books and SaaS company books and this and that. I think that helped a little bit for confidence. But yeah, it took a lot of work. And but did I make mistakes along the way? You asked earlier. Several. We made a bunch. But at the end of the day, you fix those mistakes and you stay confident. You might have a bad month. December is never a good month in GovTech. It's never. Half the people are on vacation or gone. If you expect December to be, the only way you're going to get business in December is if they got to spend their money before January. Because if they don't spend it, they lose it in the government world, right? So, and that's why January is always a great month, because if you're fiscal year January, it's like, okay, let's go. We've been waiting to use you.
New budget.
Yeah, new budget. You got it, man.
Yeah. Yep. Well, what else? Any other recommendations for maybe entrepreneurs getting started with outsourcing?
I would strongly encourage the outsource development, only because it worked for us. There's probably be a Matt out there and do your own. If you know how to tech, if you know tech and you know code, be do it yourself. And for me, I was good at the business side of things and the sales side. I was lucky to have Russ to do the tech side because, again, I couldn't have done that, right? So my advice would be, save as well, unless you're going to try to raise capital. You know, we paid for everything ourselves. I remember in 2016 when I LLC'd, we all threw in $500 and I paid $1,000 to go online and LLC us, and we had nothing. You have to be able to work for years and years and years and not pay yourself. So you have to somehow figure that out, unless you raise, you know, go the raise route. It will be a challenge. You will have days where you want to stop. You're like, this is not going to work. You will fail. And then you'll have days of, holy cow, I got a $16,000 order. I'm going to make this thing work. So it's a definite up and down battle, mentally, physically. And if you can just stay focused and you believe in it, I believed in our products. I really believed in our products. I would have clients tell me, thank you for building this. This is great. I don't have to use Excel anymore. So I knew we had something. And if you believe in your product and there's a need for it in the market, you will succeed in this market. A lot of SaaS companies fail. I know that for a fact. It's a hard, GovTech is a very tricky space to get into because you better know your customer. Simple technology. Don't be too advanced. Don't get crazy with buttons all over the place. Make it very easy for the end user. And I think you're going to get something.
You know, a lot of companies we talk to here, I've talked to lately, they're trying to be everything to everybody. And it's really good. Like, start in the niches. Get really good at a niche before you try to be, you know, the solution for everything.
So from 2016 to 2020, only had two products. And then got in. That's when we had a little bit more money. And then we got another developer. And then we got into quality assurance and field training and DORs and pro standards and policy. So, yeah, you know, we made a huge advancement over the last 3 years. But for the first 4 to 5 years, we only sold what we had. And that's we didn't have money to build anything else or do anything else.
So I don't know. I think that's just a really good way to do things. Well, I mean, especially it forces you to, you know, work on your pitch, you know, figure out exactly how to present your product and all of those kinds of things, which multiple products. I mean, maybe you could talk about this. Multiple products distracts you from.
It does get hard, I will say. It's especially with the constant updates that they're doing and remembering that these updates are out there. And it will get challenging.
Ben, we've got a lot of GovTech entrepreneurs in the audience. Any advice for them?
If you have an idea, go for it. And what's the worst that's going to happen? I mean, you know, as long as you have supplemental income coming in somewhere at nighttime, give it a shot. I love the GovTech space. I really, really do. I know I studied it. I know every one of our competitors. I know what they have, what technology they have, what they do, how they recruit, what's going on internally, because you meet them at trade shows. And I'm friendly with our competitors. I show them our technology. I'm like, here, come here. Yeah, I'll show you what ours does, because this is what we do. And be that friendly competitor, but know your competition. Know what they're doing and what can you do. What can you do better that they're not doing? It's a fun space to be in. The people we work with are awesome. Law enforcement, the majority of our clients are awesome people to work with. Same with the dispatch. They're very passionate about their industry. And when you have a solution to their hurt, they are going to thank you. And there's nothing better than building a product where you made it better for somebody else and you hear thank you afterwards. And by the way, I'm making money off this thank you. So, just for anyone that has an idea, just find that demand, find the hurt, and attack. That's it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ben. It's been such a joy to talk to you.
Yeah. This was a lot of fun, Matt. Thank you.
Hey, and that wraps us up for today. I hope that you learned something from this episode and that you enjoyed listening to it. If you would, please go to the website civicthinker.com and enter your email address. That way you can be in the loop if we push out more content or maybe someday do a future event. Oh, and we'd love to hear your suggestions on topics as well. So drop us a line at podcast@civicthinker.com and let us know if there's any questions or areas you'd like us to explore further.